Check WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are keeping calm. We're staying local. And, of course, Don Moeller joining us here for another episode of Baltimore Positive and shouting out all of our sponsors from Catonsville to downtown. And, of course, Moeller and Gary Realty as well, out closing deals. As Don, I'm sure, to tell you about his son. And, of course, his son was in the buyatoyota.com audio vault a couple weeks ago. As we're talking about all things business this week, want to remind everybody State Fair is open. I have not gotten the shrimp and grits, but I'm on my way to do that, as well as some wings from Evan Brown, who's opening a Mexican restaurant in Catonsville. Let the secret out, as well as our friends at Fadley's, who are also coming to Catonsville, but are delivering out on the curbside outside of Lexington Market during the pandemic. You can order crab cakes and my favorite mac and cheese as well. Don, how you holding up here this week? Before we get going here with the Maryland Food Bank and Carmen Del Guecho, who's joining us here, I know you want to say a little something about the people this week. We did so much with the arts and entertainment. We've talked to lots of politicians, but this week it's about people, it's about health, and it's about taking care of each other, right?
Well, it really is, Nestor, and it's about the most vulnerable in our society. We're going to talk to folks who are on the front lines. We're going to talk to our guest in a moment who really is making a difference. They always make a difference, but more so in these very, very perilous times. And it's interesting, Nestor, that you mentioned we worry about food insecurity, and we actually worry about the supply chain at this time. And important to note for folks who are in the region that State Fair has actually stepped up in that area as well, Nestor, and you can place an order for produce and protein, an entire food box to speak, and they'll put in your produce, your vegetables, your protein. When folks are worried about going to the supermarket, you can place that order at State Fair. They'll bring it right to your car. So they're trying to address the whole supply chain issue as well. So there are people doing great things. You and I have said throughout the past few weeks that the inspirational stories really are carrying the day. So in these days that are very, very difficult, there are people like our next guest making a real difference. So why don't you tell folks who we're going to chat with, and let's jump in.
Well, I want to take this back just to the bigger picture. Tim Bojanowski came on a couple weeks ago. You can check that out on the Baltimore Positive, and sort of warned us that this was coming. And it's fascinating for me because, you know, my wife's a regular consumer of content. She works all day. She's not on the internet. And this weekend, she started seeing the stories, on the weekend news and the weekend news story, the larger 3-hour broadcast where they really took a deeper dive this weekend into where all this farm food is getting dumped and milk getting dumped and vegetables rotting, squash rotting out in fields in America. I want to bring in from the Maryland Food Bank, Carmen Del Guecho, here to talk about all things going on in hunger here in Maryland. I want to thank John Maroon as well as Cal Ripken, who both brought your name up, and I know you and Don have known each other for a long, long time. You've been doing this. This isn't a pandemic issue. Hunger, and I go back to the Super Bowl and what I've done there with Taste of the NFL, and every year having Andrew Zimmern on talking about hunger in this country is a 365, 24/7 thing, but even further exacerbated by the obvious issue now of unemployment and the food chain problem. Carmen, welcome in. I wish we were welcoming you hey, we solved all the problems and we don't need a food bank anymore, but I know that that's not the case, and I'm out on the front of your website seeing feeding more Marylanders during COVID-19. I would say that if I had you on in January, you'd already say, we got enough problems here, feeding the people right. We have. And now here we go. Tell me what the last 6 or 7 weeks has taught a guy like you that's a pretty grizzled veteran when it comes to all this, right?
Yeah, so I think the last 7 weeks have been taught us all a lot. I think this is a situation that's beyond anybody's wild expectations. And so to realize just how close many people that we interact with every day, who are working every day, are close to being food insecure. And, situations that have occurred over the last 6 or 7 weeks where more and more people have lost their jobs have resulted in significantly increased demand and a lot more traffic coming into our partner network.
Well, that's a term that I'm sure you've used before, food insecure. I can't say that I'm tremendously familiar with that term, but my father stood in bread lines in 1929. Mm-hmm. My father was born mm-hmm. in 1919, bread and soup lines, and for my whole, first 25 years of my life till my father passed, he told me about 1929 and Herbert Hoover and a chicken in every pot and soup lines and bread lines in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and the coal mines. So I'm familiar with those stories. I must say that in the United States of America, this weekend's the first time I literally saw car lines for in pictures of people waiting in line to get bread. Yeah. And the first thing that I noticed at the beginning of the pandemic 7 weeks ago, in every supermarket I went to, the flour aisle was cleaned out, right? Like, so people were not only thinking about toilet paper, and we had our sense of humor about that 7 weeks ago, but where we are now with food and bread and soup and vegetables and resources, and these stories we hear are farmers growing things that we cannot get to the table here. And that feels like a crime against humanity to me, Carmen.
Yeah, I mean, that's challenging to watch as well from where we are. I mean, clearly there's the disruption in the supply chain and the ability to get that product out of that field into some facility where it can get processed into a distributor into to the consumer. Just there's so many links in that chain that are disrupted during this process with the staffing issues or other things that it's really hard, it's really disappointing and difficult to watch. I will tell you one of the challenges that we're facing is, you know, we're obviously trying to distribute as much food as we can, and our approach is to try to provide folks access to food to limit the amount of times that they have to leave their home to get it. And so there is a little bit more of a demand or a need for non-perishables, frankly, in this environment, so that people, again, could get access for food for some period of time and be able to use it during the course of a week or 2 weeks before they have to go back out and get more. So the market's biased or slanted a little more towards that non-perishable product, which I don't think is helping farmers. But I think there's some news on the way with regard to the farming community that I think hopefully will free up some of the product.
I ran out of milk this morning, Don, so I'll let you have that, Carmen.
No. Carmen, one of the things that we like to do for folks who are listening on Baltimore Positive, and the whole focus is, you know, when we started this, it's that there are good people making a difference in our community. And certainly you and Nancy Smith and all the folks I know at the food bank are right up there in terms of the good people making a difference and working with your partners. Take this opportunity, Carmen, to tell people, give us what I always call the four dummies summary of the Maryland Food Bank for folks who have heard about it, but don't necessarily know what it is. So can you educate our listeners as to what the Maryland Food Bank is, what it does, and how you all operate?
Yeah. Thanks, Don. Yeah, we say we're the food assistance safety net for the state of Maryland, right? So what that means is basically that we are accessing food by every way we possibly can, donated or purchased, accessing any program available, government or otherwise, and bringing that food to communities all across our state through a network of these smaller partners. Some of them are church groups, some of them are larger organizations that you're familiar with, who take the food that we provide them and in turn around distribute it to their local communities. And so our job is to source as much of that food as we can and provide that access, provide access to our network so that they can do the work that they do. And so to your point of unbelievably powerful stories and the amount of commitment that we see every day from our partners across the state, who many of them are volunteer-run, who are open every day and making sure that their people in their community have access to food. Those stories are endless in terms of the amount of the work that those folks are doing and the load that they're carrying on our behalf to take that food that we're sourcing and getting it out. And
then how do people who need food, I think what they're interested in is how do I get food if I need food from the Maryland Food Bank? How does this distribution system work? Because it's complex.
It is. For the end user, hopefully it's fairly easy. So if you go to our website and we have a find food, we have a map of the state, and so you would put in your zip code, and we would direct you to a number of pantries within a 3 mile radius of where you live, and so and give you the sense of the hours that they're open, so that you know that during that time you can go to one of the pantry sites and know that they will open. And those, we work with those pantries every day to make sure they make that experience as positive as it can be from a dignity perspective and give folks access to much needed food.
Well, there's a Google map right up on the front of the website at mdfoodbank.org. You can find it. Open or closed distribution sites. It even says, you know, at hours, all the things that are up there. And this is during COVID-19. Yeah. There is a specific find food map. You know, I want to ask you about spoilage and about about, you know, how food gets located and gets brought to you. But more than that, when someone's in line in your place Monday and they get food and they come back a week, 2 weeks, whenever it is, get more food, you get it. What is being done to teach that person job skill? You know, what happens when someone takes food out? They clearly need it,
yeah,
and they're clearly going to need it again the next time,
yeah,
unless something changes between today,
yeah,
and the time they run out of food. What does that look like so that, quite frankly, you don't have repeat customers? That's not your goal, right? Like, literally.
Absolutely. I mean, our goal is really to put ourselves out of business. And so you're speaking right to the heart, Nestor, of our strategic plan, which, unfortunately, in this COVID environment, we really kind of set aside for a little while to focus our efforts on the need. But
you're having a lot of people, correct me if I'm wrong, coming to you, and I've talked so much about this, and we talked to Don's sister, Patty. I hope everybody goes and checks out episode 190 of Baltimore Positive about the psychological part, okay? I mean, I'm a 52-year-old guy. I grew up in Dundalk. My dad stood in soup lines and whatnot. I have never filed for unemployment. Hopefully, I won't have to. I have never stood in the line. I've never been food insecure. I've never thought, I don't have a dollar for my next meal, or where is my... I've never in my life had to think like that, and I think the first time I would ever have to think like that might be now, literally,
yeah,
right? And if that's the case, there's a whole sense of pride, information, even for college-educated people,
sure,
to say, this is the first time in my life I can't make ends meet, and I have no food in my cupboard. What do I do? I would think for people that, quite frankly, have used you before or have been... you know, in these type of circumstances before, it's been a thought that has entered their mind before. I think we're seeing so many people now that they're having thoughts they've never had to have before because they have been so functional prior to now where we're having 20% unemployment, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, so this is the one piece that's a little bit similar to the government shutdown a year ago. Similar situation, right? So a lot of those folks who were facing not getting paychecks for several weeks had no idea, you know, how where food bank was, how they can access that. And so we're seeing that in obviously much higher numbers than we would in a year ago. But, yeah, that's exactly the case. There's a lot of folks, not a large number of folks coming to our food pantries are doing it for the first time ever and are trying to navigate the system. And, again, we're trying to make it as positive experiences we possibly
How much
can.
Of that is emotional when you meet someone who's down on their luck for the first time in their lives and they're an adult and they come in and they say, please help me?
Yeah.
And that's that'll choke anybody up.
Powerful. I mean, you know, I get criticized here at the food bank. I cry once a week about a story because it happens all the time. And it's very emotional. You know, you're glad and humbled to be play some role in trying to help that person get back on their feet. But the reality is, you know, they've kind of worked hard their whole lives. They've done everything they can possibly do and still be left in this situation. And there's a little bit of this helplessness that they tend to feel. And our job is to try to make sure they feel, at least as it relates to food, we can take that issue off the table for them and give them some peace of mind to allow them to kind of figure out how to get back in a better situation.
Yeah, people come in there and volunteer and say, I'm hungry, I'll help, I'll do whatever I need to do in order to eat. I would think that would also be a part of something that that someone comes there for the first time and gets fed that then wants to feed others.
Yeah, I mean, we see that a lot of our pantry networks in particular, people who are there every week to pick food who feel like they want to give back. And so that, again, is a very powerful statement when we see people who are saying, hey, I'm food insecure, but I want to help my fellow community members. And so it happens all the time. And again, another heartwarming story and kind of renews your faith.
For those of you just tuning in, we are with Carmen Del Cuecho, president and CEO of the Maryland Food Bank, doing really, really important work at all times, but certainly during the pandemic. Carmen, you mentioned that you cry almost once a week. I wonder if you can, we certainly don't want any names, but put a face on it for our listeners in terms of, can you talk about a family or an individual that you came in contact with where the Maryland Food Bank really made a difference and you said, boy, did I make the right move leaving the banking industry and coming here to do this kind of work. Give us an example of a family that really touched you.
Yeah, I mean, it happens pretty much. It happens pretty much every day. I mean, there's stories come that I can in touch with that I hear from others or interact directly. But you know, you the ones that tug at my heart, the hardest, frankly, are the families, as you said, the folks who are dealing with children at home who are sacrificing their own, you know, access to food so their kids can eat. And so I've had, you know, I had one particular family who had that situation where a gentleman who had a child who was dealing with some health issues and had a start missed more work on a regular basis and ultimately lost his job as a result of that because he was caring for his young child at home and then, you know, was really trying to figure out how he can continue to provide her access to much-needed nutritious food so that she can respond to her medications and respond to her treatments. And just to hear his story and how thankful he was that, you know, first of all, he said, I used to be a donor to your organization, and now I'm a recipient, and I just thank God that you're here. And so to kind of hear those stories and to ask to have people just kind of thank us for the work we do, when in fact, you know, this is our calling. This is what we're built to do, to make sure that we are providing food for folks who are in need week after week or dealing with it on a temporary basis. But for me, what hits home is the father of three kids, that anytime a family is affected at the child level, it just it's extremely powerful. And to hear folks so being so thankful that they can, that we're there for them is humbling.
Carmen, the specific issues with COVID and getting food to people and your warehouses and all that we hear about Amazon and gloves and masks and shortages and all of those things. Give me a little look at the last 6 weeks of how your business on the inside of getting food safely, and God forbid anyone there who's volunteering. You know, we're all exposed to it when we leave our homes. I think that's very obvious, you know, and we talk so much about that, but you are essential. We talk about essential things. You are essential.
Yeah, I mean, right now, next to healthcare, obviously those healthcare workers are in great work. Food is the biggest need in response to this COVID situation. We're taking as many precautions as we can internally here because we are asking volunteers to come in and help. And our biggest challenge right now is just accessing food. The supply chain has been disrupted, as Don referenced earlier, and so we are it's becoming harder and harder to access much needed food. The prices have gone up 20-30% because the demand is so high, and the delivery times are being stretched out. So internally here, what we're trying to do is figure out how we can take what food we have here today and distribute it as effectively as we can, and then we do the same thing tomorrow, and we do it the next day. We're basically making decisions day by day, if not hour by hour, in terms of how we can make sure we are getting as much food out as we can. And so that's something that's very different in terms of just kind of managing that process on a daily basis.
Well, Carmen, I would imagine that one of the things, because I know you and your team pretty well, you're always trying to think ahead. You're always trying to strategically plan. And I can only imagine what you all are trying to prepare for in terms of the demand increase. And that's right. I haven't even had a chance to share this with you yet, but recently I spoke to someone who's very much involved in one of the private schools in the area. And I said, this really put a face on what we're going through to me. He said that he spoke to someone in admissions at one of the local private high schools. And he said they fully expect their incoming ninth grade to be off 30-40%.
Wow.
And they expect to lose as many as 30% of their 10th, 11th, and 12th graders because families have been so devastated by this economic downturn that they're just trying to make ends meet, much less pay private school tuition. What that said to me is this crisis is far beyond what we think of as the typically vulnerable in our society. Are you all planning for that? And how? What do you do in terms of the face of something like that?
Yeah, it's a great question. We've been so focused, really. You know, we built out a pretty aggressive plan to respond to this COVID really over the next 90 days because we know that, you know, there's a heightened level of anxiety. There's everybody's kind of scrambling to deal with this issue. But you're right. I mean, the reality is this is going to linger much beyond that 90-day period. And so, you know, now as we start doing some scenario planning and figuring out how do we make sure that, you know, not only are we there for the next 90 days for folks in need, but then what is the next 90 and 180 days after that going to look like? There's no doubt that demand is going to continue to be is going to be higher than traditional levels because there's going to be very few people going to necessarily be able to go back to work immediately whenever this thing turns around. So That's the kind of planning we're doing right now, to be honest with you. But this is the total uncharted waters. This is really beyond anything we would have imagined. And again, our focus has primarily been short term, just to kind of make sure we're here for people right now.
Carmen DelGuetto is the president and CEO of Maryland Food Bank. You can find them at mdfoodbank.org. Go ahead, Don. You had something on your mind.
No, I was just going to say, Nestor, when Carmen talks about the need, one of the things that we have found out about Baltimore Positive, and it's been gratifying to us, and we've seen it with other organizations that we've talked about, whether it be Thread and ask people to go help Thread.org out that we think is doing really just magnificent work in the city, whether it's an effort by a Charles Village Pub in Towson to feed healthcare workers. We found out that when folks listen to Baltimore Positive and they get motivated and they get inspired, they want to go help, they want to contribute. And so much of your organization depends on donations. And I want you to talk a little bit about that. And I can say to folks who are listening that it's really easy. The other day, it probably goes back to what Nestor said, that we have 7 grandchildren, and my wife commented that as bad as things are, you know, we feel so blessed that at this point in time, we know each of them has food on the table, that food insecurity for them, we've been blessed enough that that's not an issue. So my wife said to me, I really want us to get on the food bank and become donors. So we jumped on, and I'll tell folks, it can't be any easier. You hit a donate button, right? You can make a one-time donation, or I'm sure what you all would like is to make a monthly recurring donation, and it's pretty easy to do that, and you can do it in any amount. So can you share with our folks how donations are so important to your mission?
Yeah, and they're important to mission every day, but, you know, in particular now. So one thing I want to say is, really, 90% of the food we're distributing today, we're buying. The donated food stream has really dried up, as you've seen what supermarkets look like, right? There's less and less food available for sale, therefore less and less available for us to be donated. So we're buying more food than we ever have. We've spent, you know, over $3 million so far in the last 5 weeks, and we typically would spend $250,000 during that time frame.
Oh, wow.
We have tremendous buying power. So to the extent that people, you know, might want to go to a store, we really don't want to encourage anybody to have to go to a store, you know, not to go to a store in this environment. But we have, our buying power goes further, or sorry, dollar coming to the food bank goes further than what might go to somebody might want to buy food and donate the food. If you take that same dollar and donate to us directly, we're potentially able to buy 2 to 3 times the amount of food that you were able to buy at that local retailer. And so, as you said, Don, a dollar, you know, goes a long way, and knowing that we have that kind of support allows us to stay aggressive on this buying cycle that we're on, because again, the donated stream has been very light, and we're really having to buy more food than we ever imagined. Typically, we buy about 25% of food we distribute, but in this environment, it's about 90%.
Carmen,
question
for you on the food bank. I think about my bank and the PPP and my dealing with those great folks at Wells Fargo, and I still don't have an answer. My bank dried up. My money bank dried up. What happened? Does a food bank dry? I mean, where is all of this stored, and is there a point where you really run low, you know, and I guess at some point here during this thing where you've spent $3 million instead of $250,000, that you have more, there's more demand, but is there ever a point where you don't have food?
Well, we're pretty good at planning out ahead of time and don't get ourselves caught in that. I mean, the last thing we want to do is be in a situation where someone comes to one of our partners and for help and we're not able to respond. So we'd spend a lot of time, effort, and energy looking at trends, looking at historical data. We look at regular contact with our network to make sure that we're not in that position.
But by the way, there's no historical data for this, though,
no,
right?
Like that's the old challenge. So I would tell you that our donated menu got pretty thin about 2 or 3 weeks ago. If you asked one of our partners about, you know, where that stood, and they would have told you that it's probably the lowest it had ever been. And so again, we kind of stepped up the purchasing activity to make sure that we backfilled so that we have ample product and try to get in that position. So yeah, we work very hard to make sure we're on top of every day what kind of volume is going out and to make sure that we're actually backfilling that. But it's a challenge in this environment because, like you said, there's no precedent, there's no history, there's no playbook to follow.
Carmen, I know that historically, and you and I have chatted about it, and I've been so impressed by your effort to partner with local school systems as well. Can you share with our listeners a little background in terms of how you all work with local public schools to really make a difference?
Yeah, thank you. So, and part of our network includes about 200 schools across the state, which we have relationships with that do a couple things. Some of those schools actually have physical pantries where we deliver food weekly, monthly, and they're stored on site, and those local school administrators will give it out to families in need. Sometimes where schools don't have ability to store product, then we'll do a bit of a market, and we'll go there with a certain amount of food every week or every month and distribute it that day and don't have to worry about storing it. So that's another avenue by which we can reach the local community. And then we work with a number of backpack programs who are sending kids home from school on a Friday with food to feed their family. So that's a couple, three different ways we deal with the schools across our state. We also provide after-school meals, prepared meals for after-school programs, frankly, Don, I know you're familiar with that, in PAL centers and Boys and Girls Clubs and places where kids congregate after school to make sure they have access to a healthy meal. So we're doing our best to try to reach as many kids as we possibly can.
Don, you'll be happy to know that I'm up on the MFB COVID-19 fine food map, and I can see that, like, where I live, there's a place about 8 blocks south of me, right?
Yeah.
And I see little orange dots all through East Baltimore, all north of Patterson Park, throughout the west side of Baltimore. If anyone out there knows someone in need, or you want to donate, you want to be a part of this, you want to donate your time, you want to come help and put a mask on and some gloves and box some stuff up, I'm sure Carmen and the folks will be happy to have you throughout the state of Maryland. You can find them all at MDFoodBank.org. Don, anything to wrap up here with Carmen?
No, I just want to say to Carmen and to all my friends at the Maryland Food Bank, thank you for everything that you're doing, and I really do encourage all of those and all of our friends at Baltimore Positive, and these friends are growing leaps and bounds, which we really, really appreciate. But all of our friends, please go to the Maryland Food Bank website. Become a donor. Make a difference. It will make you feel good.
Carmen, take care of yourself. Really appreciate you making a little bit of time here. I know you're working extra time, and a big tribute to everybody out there that's doing the hard work out there that we're talking so much about. You're out on the front lines every day. If we can ever help you here at Baltimore Positive Reach, okay?
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate the time today.
You got it. Carmen Del Guecho joining us here, CEO and president of the Maryland Food Bank, mdfoodbank.org, to learn more. We got a ton of stuff here. It is Health Week. We've done education. We're going to do banking. We did the arts and entertainment. We're staying theme-oriented around here, and this is a week to make sure you're taking care of yourself. Food, exercise, mental health, all of those things, as well as helping others who are in need. That's a huge story. There's a lot of that going around here as we're all trapped in the house saying, what am I doing with my time? I'm bored. How can I help out? We're trying to give you some ideas and some food for thought. You can find me, Nasty, at WNST.net. I used to do sports. I'm doing a lot of NFL draft here this week and afterward, but really keep my head down on Baltimore Positive in all things, keeping calm, staying local, and always staying Baltimore Positive.